From Hollywood, California, and an Allied base in Cairo, Egypt, Autolite brings you Everything for the Boys, the Command Theater of the Air, starring Mr. Ronald Coleman and his guest for tonight, Miss Ida Lupino. Everything for the Boys is presented by the Electric Autolite Company and its 22 great manufacturing plants. Builders of precision equipment for 35 years. World famous for Autolite spark plugs, batteries, wire, cable, and electrical systems for automotive, aviation, and marine use. Here is your host, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
Thank you and good evening. Well, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's subject, we have a play, a sonnet, a lovely and talented guest, and a shortwave conversation with Cairo, Egypt. So to our men and women in the land of the pharaohs and the pyramids, we dedicate this global half hour.
You'd never guess that farm tractors in the Midwest had a lot to do with the success of our tanks in the African desert. Yet such was the case. Some time ago, farm tractors in dusty regions had distributor trouble. Dust and dirt got into the distributor, stalling tractors and creating a serious problem for our farmers. Then, Autolite ignition engineers got on the job, studied the problem in the field, pooled their technical knowledge and experience. And when they had finished, they had developed a dust-proof distributor that would help keep our farm tractors rolling. And came the war. And in North Africa, the fine grains of Sahara sand collected in the distributors of some military vehicles, causing dangerous delays. But the peacetime dust-proof distributor, which Autolite engineers had already adapted for use in tanks, proved highly successful. And today, this important ignition unit is standard equipment in many jeeps, trucks, command cars, mobile artillery, and reconnaissance cars. These dust-proof distributors are one more example that the name Autolite means precision manufacturing. Now, Mr. Coleman again.
Writers through the ages have expressed their various opinions on the subject of doctors. Many years ago, a doctor himself once wrote, "When people's ill, they comes to I physics bleeds and sweats them. Sometimes they live, sometimes they die. What's that to I lets them." That's all very well, but you and I, being kindly folk with little use for the cynic, are more likely to agree with Robert Louis Stevenson, who declared that of all the classes of men who stand above the common herd, the physician takes first place. Anyway, Dr. Cronin, in tonight's story of the Citadel, gives us a heartwarming insight into the trials and tribulations of a doctor's life.
Our play, Arch Obler's radio dramatization of The Citadel. The players, Mr. Ronald Coleman and his guest, Miss Ida Lupino.
That's an interesting question you've asked me. The luckiest man I've ever known? Well, there's only one possible answer. Andrew Manson. Why should I tell you about him? Andrew Manson's story won't help you out, young fellow. Or maybe it will. Andrew Manson's luck began the day he walked into a little schoolroom in the Welsh mining town, where he'd just begun to practice medicine, and began to shout at the schoolmistress. "There it is, young fellow. The first milepost on the road to good fortune is to shout at a schoolteacher, preferably young and very pretty."
"I have every right to shout.
This child has no right to be in his schoolroom. His brother has the measles, and you know it."
"Dr. Manson, if the boy had stopped school, he'd have missed his free milk. His family can't give it to him. And it's doing him a great deal of good."
My dear Miss Barlow, I admit I'm new in this village. I admit that it may be the custom here for the schoolteacher to prescribe. But I have been employed by the mining company as the physician. So would you please listen to me and send that child home at once?"
"Dr. Manson, I too am new here, and it may be the custom for the company physician to shout at women and order them about, but I doubt it very much. Would you please be so kind as to leave this classroom?"
"If you keep that child here, I'll have to report you."
"Then you'd better start making out that report. Good day, Dr. Manson."
the first item of the luck of Dr. Andrew Manson. What's that, young fellow? You can't understand what's lucky about that. Relax. This is a story with a beginning, a middle, and an ending. And we've just begun.
Yes, who is it? Dr. Manson. Andrew.
Christine, I must speak with you.
Well, Andrew, I can't ask you to come in. It's so late.
Oh, I can say it here as well as anywhere else. Christine, how long have we known each other?
Why, a month, I suppose.
A month?
Yes, it must be a month since the Halls boy has been over his measles.
1 month. Oh, I know it's hardly time enough for a girl like you. What I mean to say is, Chris, that I've got a new job. The most wonderful job in the world.
Andrew, where?
At Abelaw. I've just seen the miners' committee. $2,500 a year and a house. A house, Christine.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, it's a beautiful place. Green fields and a park. And, Christine, there's actually a hospital for me to work in. Now, would you... That is to say, could you...
Is this a proposal of marriage, Dr. Manson? Or do you want me for your new assistant?
Oh, Christine.
Of course I'll marry you, Andrew. You're the first man who ever shouted at me. And I liked it.
Well, young fellow, so they met and they married. And hurried over to Abelaw. And went to visit the big house which Andrew had been given to live in rent-free as part of his salary. And on that day, Andrew's luck really began.
Well, Chris, we've seen it all.
Yes, Andrew.
Closely as I can remember, this place has a dining room, drawing room, morning room, and 5 bedrooms upstairs.
No wonder they wanted a married man.
Oh, Chris, this isn't funny. I had no right to bring you into this. A huge, empty house. All I've got in the world is £10. Well, Chris, didn't you hear me?
A doctor with bicarbonate of soda for his prescriptions, and I have a frying pan. Don't you see? We're both in business, Dr. Manson.
There you are, young fellow. Is there anything luckier than a man who marries a woman and then finds that she has a decent sense of humor? Or the greater luck of finding that she also has good sense?
The river's high for this time of the year.
That's what they say.
You know, I've no right to be lying here soaking up the sun this way.
Oh, you've every right. It's Sunday. You've been working hard.
It's been all right, hasn't it, Chris?
You're a good doctor.
Am I?
Why do you say that?
Is this to be my life? Looking at tongues and taking temperatures?
What do you want to do?
These miners. You know, Chris, there's something terribly wrong. Their lungs. Why should there be such a marked preponderance of lung diseases among the anthracite workers? Do the sharp crystals of dust that they breathe cause some chemical action? Something in the air of the mines?
Why don't you do something about it?
What?
Well, experiment. Find out.
Oh, Chris, I haven't the right to spend any money now.
The baby?
Of course.
You're a most impatient father. It won't be for months and months.
Ah, but we must prepare for the baby.
Yes, that's right, Andrew. And that's why I want you to start your research on that dust disease right away. For the baby. Yes, I said, for the baby. Because I want his father to be a happy man. And you'll never be happy, Andrew, unless you're the sort of doctor who gives more of himself than pills and the soothing bedside manner.
But Chris, now look
here. Now, don't argue with me. It isn't good for me. Haven't you heard? I'm a woman in a condition.
Thank you.
Well, young fellow, luck has all sorts of facets. And the greatest of all man's good fortunes, I say, is to have a woman who makes it possible for you to live when luck turns her head. And for a while, there's misfortune.
Chris, I'm home. Oh, Dr. Llewellyn.
We've been trying to find you on your rounds all morning, Manson.
Well, what? Chris. Is it Chris?
She had an accident.
Accident?
When she was going over the bridge in the garden this morning, one of the rotten planks gave way.
Well?
She's all right. But I'm afraid.
No.
I did everything I could. Brought a nurse from the hospital. Manson, I think you'd better go in and see your wife. She's been asking for you for hours.
Yes. Yes.
Andrew?
Chris.
Come close.
Oh, my darling.
Andrew died.
Oh, Chris, and I wasn't even here.
Andrew, how terrible for you. I cried, but you can't. You never could cry.
Chris?
Dr. Llewellyn said, never have a baby again. Not ever. All mixed up. But full of hate, tears, and questions. But I know. You've got to be more than a good doctor now, Andrew. You've got to be the best ever was.
And if that woman you marry has the strength to help fight your battles, that's the luck that comes to only a few men.
Commissioner, what can I do for you?
We want to see the doctor.
Well, he isn't in, if you'll come back.
They're coming in now.
Aye.
But I don't understand.
We've every right to come in. This house belongs to the committee. And as representatives of the committee, we can do as we please.
We certainly can.
What's wrong? What's happened?
Look, it's in here.
Oh. No, please, that's my husband's laboratory. His experiments.
That's exactly why we're here.
Look at those poor dumb little creatures. Unable to make a sound against this fiend's tortures.
Oh. Tortures? What are you talking about?
Now, don't try to protect him. We know about his dirty experiments. Come on, men, smash it up.
Yes, break it off.
No, stop. Please, stop.
Yes, Mrs. Manson, we've done our duty. Mr. Manson will know how we feel about what he's been doing.
What he's been doing? You fools. You everlasting fools.
Who dared?
Now, look here, Mrs. Manson, you've no...
Shut up and listen to me, all of you. Do you know what you've done here? You haven't broken up test tubes and smashed a few bottles. You've shoved a few hundred of your fellow workmen down into their graves. Yes, into their graves. For no matter what your vicious little stupid minds might have thought, my husband was working for you and the owners of the mines. Your men go to their graves with their lungs ground up by silica dust. But instead of fighting for fresh air and decent food, you come here and smash up the work of the only man who's fighting for
it. How about the animals?
Oh, you probably don't even know what I'm talking about. Your kind live in every century. Impeding progress. You blinded astronomers in the Middle Ages. You hanged chemists because they saved a man with another's blood. And you'll keep on forever in your stupid ignorance. Go ahead, take the animals. But get out, all of you. And the next time you pass the lung ward at the hospital, stop and listen. Just listen. That noise you'll hear will be men trying to breathe. Did you hear me? Trying to breathe.
Well, young fellow, even if I stopped right now, you'd have to admit that my friend Andrew was a very lucky fellow. But I'm not going to stop because if I did, I'd miss telling you a vital truth. Sometimes a lucky man thinks that he's greater than his luck.
Chris, don't look so shocked. It's all for the better. London, instead of this slag dump.
But I don't understand.
Well, it's all very simple. My experimental work is over. There's no reason we shouldn't improve our situation. Oh, come on, Chris. I can be a better doctor in the city than the country. And the money. It's about the time you had it a little easier. Dresses, interesting friends, a decent place to live. I want that for you very much. And London's the place to get it. Of course I bought new furniture. This is London, Chris, not Abelor.
Yes, I found that out.
What are you mumbling about? Oh, yes, I've got some more news for you. From now on, you're my dispenser. It's a wonderful way to make some extra money. All you have to do is fill the bottles with these stock mixtures, label them, and wrap them. A good dose of iron mixture never did anyone any harm.
£20 guineas. Andrew, that's quite a fee, isn't it?
And to think you didn't want to come to London.
Yes, but didn't you tell me Mrs. Everett wasn't sick? And why all this money?
Oh, a little trick I learned from Dr. Ivy. A harmless injection, and the patient thinks she's a new woman.
But isn't that the sort of thing I've heard you talk against?
Oh, confounded, Chris. You're never satisfied. After years of tramping around attending miners' wives in dirty back bedrooms, I wake up and decide to make a living for us both, and you object. It doesn't make good sense.
This check that Dr. Ivy sent you...
Well, what of it?
Well, you told me yourself. He isn't even a capable surgeon. And yet you send your patient to him and take a cut of the fee.
Are you beginning that again? You talk as if I were a thief. If I take this money, it's only as a means to an end.
If I could only understand this change in you.
Change? Yes, why not? I've changed into a man who knows that he can't change the world. But people judge you by what you have. All right, now I'll do the happy. And there's nothing more to say about it. You hear me, Chris? Nothing.
Andrew, long time ago, you talked about your life as an attack on the unknown. Climb uphill as though you had to take some citadel you knew was there on the top.
Oh, I was a young fool. I've grown up, I tell you. Yes, and I advise you to do the same.
Yes, young fellow, those are the facts of a man turning his back on his luck. Now, there's wonder in your face. You're asking, well, then, why did you start off by saying this one was the luckiest man you ever knew? Well, I told you to listen to the beginning, middle, and ending. And here's the ending of it all.
Andrew?
Yes, Chris?
Home so early?
Is it early?
Darling, what's wrong?
I've just killed a man.
Andrew.
As I went into the operating room, his wife ran up to me. God bless you, she said. God bless you for getting Dr. Ivy to do the operation.
Dr. Ivy?
Yes, Dr. Ivy, the great surgeon who sends me checks. Chris, he couldn't operate. He couldn't operate at all. He's nothing but a butcher. Stupid, blundering butcher. And I sent my patient to him and stood there and watched him die. Go. Chris, what'll I do? getting in with that whole money-grabbing crowd. Chris, what a time all this must have been for you.
No, just talk about tomorrow.
All right. I still have some real doctors as friends. As Denny and Stillman. Now, if the three of us could find a country town and open up a real hospital and laboratory.
No fee-grabbing, no soft-soaping of hypochondriacs. Absolute allegiance to the scientific ideal. A place where rich or poor were served alike, and nothing mattered but the truth. Oh, I'm sorry, Andrew. Perhaps I shouldn't. Andrew, why don't you say something? What are you thinking?
That someday someone may think of me and knowing you, say, there goes the luckiest man in all the world. I love you, Chris.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard a radio dramatization of A.J. Coleman's famous novel, The Citadel, starring Ronald Coleman and Ida Lupino. The play was directed by Arch Oboler, and the original musical score was composed and conducted by Gordon Jenkins. While our engineers are setting up the shortwave circuit between Hollywood and Cairo, Egypt, here is a word from Autolite. Have you ever had the sad experience of pressing the starter button of your car and discovering that nothing happens? Well, many a car owner has, particularly in these days of gas rationing when fewer miles of driving make it difficult to keep car batteries at full efficiency. Now, one of the best ways to sidestep battery troubles is to check your battery regularly, at least once a month. Make sure there's enough water in it to cover the plates, that the terminals and connections are clean, the insulation on the cables in good condition, and the battery is bolted tightly in its frame. Perhaps the surest way to keep your battery delivering power when you need it is to have your local car dealer, serviceman, or one of the thousands of Autolite battery dealers inspect and check its performance. And if you find your present battery is beyond repair, replace it with a new Autolite battery. Autolite batteries are specified by many leading engineers as original equipment on the cars they build. Remember, the name Autolite means precision manufacturing. Here is Mr. Coleman again.
And now, for no reason, unless it is that Gordon Jenkins has written some beautiful music for it, and that I like it, as I'm sure you do, here is Elizabeth Barrett Browning's lovely sonnet, How Do I Love Thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach when feeling out of sight for the ends of being an ideal grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely as men strive for right. I love thee purely, as men turn from praise. I love thee with the passion put to use in my old griefs, and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with a love I seem to lose with my lost sins. I love thee with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life. And if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death.
Mr. Coleman, the circuit is through to Cairo.
All right, we hope it works tonight. Now just put on these earphones and here we go. This is Ronald Coleman and Ida Lupino calling Cairo, Egypt. Cairo, this is Hollywood calling. Come in, Cairo. This is Hollywood calling. Hello. Come in, Cairo. Hello, Wally.
Hello, Wally.
Hello to both of you. Hello. Come in, Cairo.
trouble, Ronnie?
Well, it doesn't, doesn't sound good, Ida. The shortwave gremlins are at it again. We were out in force last week and spoiled our chat with Alaska. Let's try once more. Come in, Cairo. Come in. Hollywood calling. Come in, Cairo. You hear that?
Shortwave gremlins?
Yeah, they thrive on static. A hex on them. Are you there, Cairo? No, it's no good, Ida. The engineer says we are unable to complete the circuit to Cairo.
Oh, Ronnie, that's too bad.
Well, there's a chance it'll clear up later, but...
Well, can the boys at the other end hear us?
Oh, possibly.
Well, then, let's send the messages anyway.
All right. Hello, Sergeant Wally Reed and Sergeant Joe Sudano in Cairo, Egypt. Here's some messages for you. Joe, we called your mother in Elwood City, Pennsylvania.
Yes, she didn't have a phone, so we called your neighbor across the street, Mrs. Hollowatner, and she called your mother over.
Your mother was so excited, all she could do was say hello. So Mrs. Hollowatner took over and relayed the messages.
And did a fine job, too. Joe, your mother says the family's all well. Your father's driving his truck all out for victory. Nick is a paratrooper, now stationed in England. And your kid brother, John, is in the infantry.
And your little sister, Rosanna, is collecting waste paper in the school salvage drive.
And your mother is glad to hear that the foot you injured in fighting off a raid on Anzio is better now.
And she's proud you've become an aerial engineer on your plane. And you, Wally, we phoned your mother in Houston, Texas.
Everybody's fine and sends love, including your nephews Bruce and Buddy and niece Barbara Jean. Your brother Francis is in Georgia with an armored division.
And we understand you're very handy with machines yourself, as you used to patch up old autos and went into a radio shop, and now in the signal corps and a repairman at a bomber base.
Wally, your mother said to see the pyramids and the Sphinx for her.
But she said not to ask the Sphinx any riddles because as you always have all the answers yourself.
She told us that you traveled around the Persian Gulf with a radio recording unit, making records to be sent back home to the States. Records of the boy saying, hello, Mom.
And she told us that if she was making a recording to send you, she'd say, hello, son, the family misses you but is proud of you. We here are going to stay on the job and finish the job.
Time's up, Mr. Coleman.
Well, time's up, men. Sorry we missed out on a two-way chat, and better luck next time. Good night and good luck.
Good night, fellows, and God bless you.
We have just talked to a pair of our fighting men overseas. Now, may we think for a moment of the women who are behind the men behind the guns? The magnificent way in which women are working for victory with their hands as well as their hearts will make one of the brightest chapters in the final history of the war. Hundreds of thousands of additional women are needed by July to meet the requirements of our production program and women's branches of our armed forces. The men at the front need more women behind them. Your local government employment office can tell you where you can best help the war effort and effectively speed the day of victory.
Join us next week when the Electric Autolite Company again presents Everything for the Boys, starring Mr. Ronald Coleman in one of the most significant stories to come from the present conflict, Gene Fowler's The Jarvis Bay, dedicated to two men of the United States Navy who will speak to us from the land down under, in faraway Noumea on the island of New Caledonia.
So until next week, this is Ronald Coleman saying good night to you and the boys, and God be with you.
And now, this is Frank Martin saying good night for Autolite.
Miss Lupino can now be seen in the Warner Brothers picture In Our Time.
Our program has come to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Ronald Coleman Show is brought to you by transcription each Tuesday evening at 9 o'clock.